the Underdog Podcast from SB Nation and Underdog Dynasty.
Welcome back to the Conference USA Underdog Podcast here on UnderdogDynasty.com, SB Nation's home for G5 football. We just wrapped up Conference USA Media Days in Texas this week. Our guys, Steve Helwick and Eric Henry, were on the ground covering all the good stuff there for you. If you head over to UDD.com, if you're not already there at this very moment, you can check out their recaps from the East and the West, respectively. Check out everything that coaches said. But today, we're definitely going to go over some of the highlights from those conferences and play some of our best sound bites for you before we get into the weekend. As we record this, it's 3 o'clock on a Friday, and at least where I am. And Eric, I don't know about you, but I'm having a beer as we record because it's been that kind of week. But I understand you. Had some trouble getting home from Texas. Doing okay, buddy?
I'm doing a-okay, man. I mean, it's all good. It's all water under the bridge now that I am back home. But yeah, you know, the friendly skies, as they call them, could be a little bit rough. Getting in and out of DFW was a bit of a challenge. I flew out of Orlando. It was about an hour delay to get from Orlando to DFW. And then getting back home, unfortunately, was a 4.5 hour delay. So that was a little rough. But apparently I wasn't the only one. Our friend Evan Dudley, who came on the podcast before, he was stuck at DFW till about 1:30 in the morning for the first day on Wednesday, along with Bill Clark and the UAB contingency. And then trying to get back home as well. I was told that Will Healy and the Charlotte contingency of Benny LeMay and Alex Highsmith also had some trouble getting back home. So it seemed to be an issue, just like a weather pattern in a certain area. Apparently the FIU crew didn't have much of an issue, and I haven't heard of any other teams, but it was an eventful travel, you know, midweek deal. So nobody likes being stuck in airports. I'm sure we can all agree on that, but hey, all's well that ends well.
For sure. Just air travel in the summers always seems to be sort of a crapshoot with weather patterns, like you mentioned, and lightning storms and all that. And that's never fun. But glad you got home okay. Speaking of FIU, we can go ahead and talk about them first. Some good stuff from Butch Davis at CUSA Media Day at the Star in Frisco there. First thing was he talked about James Morgan being the best QB he's ever coached, could potentially be an early round draft pick in the upcoming NFL draft here. Eric, first of all, do you agree with that sentiment?
You know what? At first, on its surface, that statement seems a little outlandish. But then you want to go back and you look at the quarterbacks who he's actually coached, and this isn't a slight at the QBs who he's coached in terms of their skill, because they were good college quarterbacks. You go on the list. Ken Dorsey, obviously the most notable name, national champion, a guy who goes on to play with the Cleveland Browns, a couple of our teams, San Francisco, et cetera. Outside of that, you're talking about guys like Scott Covington. You got to really dig back into your college football memory there. He was quarterback of Miami in 1998. Was a seventh-round draft pick of the Bengals. Kenny Kelly, who actually works for FIU now as the color guy on the radio and TV broadcast. Then you're going into the TJ Yates of the world, who I believe is still around, North Carolina guy, was with Houston for a while. So in terms of NFL success, he hasn't had that home run guy per se, but he has had talented college guys. So to answer your question, yeah, I do believe that J-Mo does have the talent to be that guy. And as a matter of fact, it just, once again, racking my brain here, I believe T.J. Yates was a fifth-round pick. So if James Morgan can live up to his Butch Davis's his prediction that he could be a third or fourth-round pick, yes, it would be the highest drafted Butch Davis quarterback in his entire coaching career, which seems hard to believe. But, yeah, I could buy that.
It's definitely going to be between him and Mason Fine as we talk about the Conference USA quarterbacks who have the potential to get drafted in this upcoming year. Eric, you were on the ground. You were able to record what Butch Davis said exactly. Let's take a listen to that real quick.
I had two quarterbacks at Miami, Kenny Dorsey and Scott Covington, that made it to the NFL. T.J. Yates of North Carolina. We had some other guys. And at Miami, we had a lot of them. Really, really good quarterbacks. He's outstanding. He's super smart, unbelievably competitive. His work ethic is outstanding. He's got the arm that he can absolutely, there's not a throw on the field that he can't make.
There you have it. That's what Butch Davis had to say about his quarterback. Another interesting bite from coach out of out of his availability this week was he seems to think that older coaches are being overlooked in college football in favor of some of the younger guys. Is that right, Eric?
Yeah, that's something that I've always kind of wanted to talk to Butch about, and I found it interesting because, and this is just my own personal perspective here, you get so caught up in the idea of age and the hot, young, trendy coach. Think about it, right? You look at the NFL, you've got guys like Sean McVay or, you know, Cliff Kingsbury, who's a younger guy. And that same trend is there in college. I mean, look at Will Healy here at Charlotte. Not to say that Coach Healy isn't deserving of the job, but he's 34 years old. And you just wonder what that perspective is like from the guy like a Butch Davis, who's been around in this game for 40, 45 years and is 67 now. And what really triggered my interest in that question was the hiring of Mack Brown at North Carolina, who I believe is the same age as Butch. If my memory is serving correct, I want to say he's 66 or 67. I just was curious Coach's thoughts, and he had a really strong opinion. And it was actually something kind of refreshing to hear, because being around Butch on a, you know, a weekly basis, you don't see that quote unquote, you know, old man mentality. I mean, I think it's subjective, Joe. Some coaches may be older and maybe figureheads. I mean, growing up down here in Florida, you kind of remember the later years of Bobby Bowden, who, you know, Coach Bowden had the headset on the sidelines, but didn't necessarily seem like, you know, he was, you know, going through all the play calls and whatnot. You know, he seemed to just, you know, be there, kind of that figurehead guy. But Coach Davis is not that guy at all. I mean, he's as energetic and as enthusiastic as ever about being around this FIU program and just coaching college football. And I think part of that may have to do with how things ended at North Carolina and having to spend a couple years on the sideline, no pun intended, at ESPN. But he's really enthusiastic and energetic, and he had some really strong thoughts about maybe some programs overlooking older coaches.
I have to ask, was all this conversation spurred by the FaceApp challenge that's going on Instagram right now?
You caught me as I'm taking a sip of water, but it was not spurred by that. Coach Davis is a lot of things, and energetic is one of them, but being the most technologically savvy guy is – I shouldn't say he's not tech savvy. Coach is just old school. So I don't think he is using the Face app or social media of any kind for that matter.
Sure, sure. I did think that was kind of an interesting coincidence that we're having this conversation at the same time. But, I think he's got somewhat of a point. I think largely younger coaches are definitely a hot commodity in terms of recruiting right now. A lot of these high caliber recruits definitely want to play for someone who, you know, at least on the surface would understand the, you know, quote unquote millennial culture, Gen Z culture, whatever you want to call it. And certainly easier to do that with someone who's closer to that age group. But you know, I think for what it's worth, I think a lot of the older guys in college football, like Coach Davis, are doing a good job, and you know, they're doing a good job of not really letting that perception really toy with how they do their job too much. Because Butch, I think, is doing as good a job as anybody of getting, you know, high level recruits right now. Would you agree with that?
No, absolutely. And I'm just going to ask you this question really quickly, because this was the money quote that Butch said, is that, you know, I've got 30 plus years of relating to 18-year-olds. And this would, just to turn the question back on you, I think the point he's making is that, I mean, think about it, right? You know, you stop, quote unquote, being relatable to 18-year-olds once you're like 25. So, I mean, that's kind of like us. So I think having 30 plus years of trying to find that linchpin between yourself as someone who may be viewed as a superior. I mean, Joe, when I was at, you know, when I go to press conferences or was at this, Media Days event, I've got James Morgan, who's 22, 23 years old, calling me sir. And I'm only 4 years older than him. So, you know, you're going to have that generational gap regardless. So the question I have for you is, essentially, he has 30 years of practice of knowing somehow some way to relate to kids. Is that not fair?
No, that's definitely fair. I mean, it's not like we really thought he was going into kids' houses and trying to recruit them with promises of like the best sock hops in the nation or whatever you want to call it. Right. Like,
right.
But yeah, I do think it's interesting. You said too, that like you stop really relating to 18-year-olds when you're 25 in most cases. Like I definitely, you know, I don't know what high school kids are into right now, and I'm only 26. So I definitely think you have an interesting point there. But yeah, I think the more things change, the more they stay the same in regards to, you know, a lot of these things. I think it just as the technology changes, you have to be able to keep up with like the mediums of communication and not necessarily like not the communication itself as much, but you brought up him not being the most tech savvy guy in the world. And that hurts a little bit, but you know, at the end of the day, he is who he is. So I think that in and of itself is a pretty decent recruiting tool. Not to beat that into the ground too much, have a lot more to go through here before we wrap up the show. We've only done one team, obviously. This is something that I wanted to make mention of. Marshall head coach Doc Holliday talking about the transfer protocols as they stand right now in the NCAA. Let's take a listen to that real quick.
I don't like it. I think the greatest thing that this game teaches you is overcome adversity and fight through things. And you know, and I think to give these kids an easy way out, I'm not sure it's good for the kids. You know, and there are certain situations that, you know, but that being said, we're going to take advantage of it.
Sure.
I mean, we have to. So, you know, we lost a couple of grad transfers and picked up four. So, you know, I don't think it's a good thing. I'm anxious to see how it shakes out after 1 year. You know, there's only 10% of the people in the transfer pool end up in scholarships. So I think, you know, a lot of these kids are going to that portal. And I think at the end of the year, there's going to be a lot of kids that gave up scholarships going to that portal that are going up to nothing. And these kids right now aren't. They all think they're all going to get scholarships. And they all think they're going to get immediately eligible. You know, so I think after this thing shakes out for a year, hopefully it slows down a little bit. And, but again, I just worry about the message we're sending these young kids today, because the greatest thing this game teaches you is to overcome adversity.
Yeah, so that's Doc Holliday from Marshall talking about how he's generally not in favor of players transferring and using it as a way to get out of tough circumstances, which is strange, because a few people pointed this out on Twitter after he said that, but the one that I kind of latched onto was by friend of the site, Yavi Cardenas. Sorry if I'm pronouncing your name wrong. We've never actually met in person, but enjoy your stuff. From the Rivals Network, talking about how Marshall actually has transfers from FIU, West Virginia, and Kentucky coming in this season. And obviously some blatant hypocrisy there coming out of Coach Holliday's mouth. And you know, I thought I'd have a little more to say about this when I texted you or tweeted at you about it last night, Eric, but I'm a little tired. And all I'll say about that topic is it blows my mind that some of not just football coaches, but just people in this world lack self-awareness to that degree when you're basically trashing a rule that you are taking full advantage of, and you blatantly don't have like a proper understanding of why this rule exists in the first place. So that's what I found particularly frustrating about that soundbite from Coach Holliday.
So here's the first thing I want to do, and obviously you heard it in the soundbite. I just want to read it again for emphasis, just in case, you know, you might have missed it in the soundbite, or you know, you're driving your car, you didn't have to catch it. I'm just going to read this from Doc Holliday. I don't like it. I think the greatest thing that this game teaches you is how to overcome adversity and fight through things. I think to give these kids an easy way out isn't what's best. There are situations. There are certain situations. But that being said, we're going to take advantage of it. And I want to stop right there, because that's the point. Doc Holliday did say, you know, we're going to take advantage of it. We lost two and we gained four. But he finished up, as you heard in the bite, But overall, I'm still not a fan. I'm anxious to see how it shakes out after a few years, because only 10% of these kids are landing somewhere and getting scholarships. It's interesting. You said lack self-awareness, and I don't disagree with you. I guess maybe I owe this to Coach Holliday as the person who was there and hearing the tenor and the tone in his voice. He was very firm, and it's the reason why I published it. He was very firm in stating that he doesn't like it, and he I wasn't the only person he said this to. He said this to various publications. You can check out At The Roost, who covers Rice. He said it to them as well. So he was very firm in that. However, he did acknowledge that, you know, hey, I don't like it, but it's the rule. So we're not going to be, you know, we're not going to bury our head in the sand and not pick up guys from the transfer portal. So if you want to criticize Coach Holliday for a level of hypocrisy there, I do think that's fair. But he also said, you know, there are situations. Unfortunately, he kind of stopped right there. He said there are situations, and I don't know if he was referring to maybe, you know, family situations or not, because he kind of stopped his quote, as you heard in the bite there. But overall, I just found it interesting. I think I would love to, and maybe we can get, you know, Grant Traylor, who covers the herd for the Huntington. I believe it's the Dispatch Herald, I believe. Hopefully I'm getting that publication correctly. Hopefully we can get him on to maybe further on that, because the reason I bring up the tenor and the tone of his voice, I feel like I feel like there was two reasons why he was opposed to this. One, because coaches put in a lot of work to recruit players, and it's, you know, a kick in the you-know-where when they just leave. I think it's an ego bruise from one, and I think that's part of it. But I also do think there was some genuine concern on his part in terms of the last part of that quote, which is only 10%, and I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, so I can't validate whether that 10% number is correct. However, it has been shown that, put to you this way, not all the players who are entering the transfer portal are landing scholarships elsewhere. So it did sound as if that might be part of his concern, but overall, I don't blame you or anyone else who takes issue with the quote in terms of it being somewhat hypocritical, especially since he has made use of the transfer portal. But I just wanted to provide that background and that to give it a little more color, a little more context. But overall, like I said, I don't blame anyone for feeling that Coach Holiday was being hypocritical, especially since they're taking advantage of the rule.
Sure. And that's kind of my main point. Like, I'm not criticizing Holiday as a coach or a person for that matter. I just think when you're criticizing these rules, I think you have to have a slightly more self-awareness in the fact that said rule is making your team better, and B, I don't know, I think it's definitely been a few decades since Coach Holiday's been, you know, a college student, and just the landscape's a lot different. And not to get too much into it, because this is a whole different conversation, but yeah, it's not the same world where you can commit to a place that in a lot of cases is really far away from, you know, your home and all this other stuff. And then if it's clearly not going to work out, of course don't stay in that situation. That's crazy. The quote comes off as he's encouraging staying in situations that are potentially unhealthy in some cases. And that's frustrating. But you know, you are right in that he acknowledges that there's certain situations, but I think in the context, it was a little frustrating to hear as someone who transferred an undergrad and definitely benefited from it. So that's kind of that, not to harp on Coach Holiday too much. We'll move on then to talking about the Middle Tennessee State Blue Raiders and Coach Rick Stockstill. Understand he had some thoughts, on the departure of his son, who played his last season of eligibility last year, and frankly, how hard their schedule is at the beginning of this season. So what did Coach Stockstill have to say, Eric?
Yeah, you know, it was really interesting to hear. First off, this is my first time meeting Rick Stockstill in person. I mean, I just, you know, I don't want to sound like I'm gushing over the guy by any stretch of the imagination, but he's just a cool customer. That's the first thing, you know, he's just very laid back. You know, he's there, you know, I couldn't tell if they were Jays, but he definitely had some Nikes on. But it's a cool customer overall. So that's my first observation. But yeah, his comments about Brent, he was asked, and I believe it was Corey Diaz, who covers Louisiana Tech, asked the question if it was emotional not seeing Brent there, because Coach Stockstill was saying that all of the quarterbacks and all the players in the offensive meetings have to sit in the same seats when they come in. And then, you know, for that first meeting, it was weird not seeing Brent there. And Coach said that it wasn't emotional, but it was different because, and this is what I think it's interesting from the standpoint of him being his father and his coach. What he said is that with Brent, you always knew what you're going to get every single day. It's a consistent work hard, you know, be that first guy in, last guy out mentality. And that was different for him because with the other players, and the rest of this, I'm kind of assuming that's where he was going, is that with the other players now filling that spot, you know, it's an adjustment process. So I found that quote to be very interesting. And then, yeah, man, I mean, they've got a heck of a schedule when you start out three of their first four games are against Power Five teams, Power Five programs. So when you talk about that, I mean, it's really going to be, as far as their quarterback situation, it's going to be interesting to see how it shakes out, because maybe you don't want to put Randall Johnson immediately, you know, throw him to the Wolves. I mean, let's look at it. They start out at Michigan. They get a break, play against Middle Tennessee. Excuse me, they play Tennessee State. Then they play Duke. They welcome Duke to Middle Tennessee. And then they go to Iowa. And then they get into conference play, going to Marshall, FAU, and then North Texas, and then FIU. I'm just looking at the whole schedule while I'm at it. So, you know, this thing doesn't let up for them. So that was something that he harped on and said, hey, you know, unlike, you know, maybe some NFL teams who get a preseason game or two to kind of warm up, or a lot of teams who, you know, may take an FCS opponent to start the season and then maybe another softer game, they're getting right into it. So they got to be ready to go, hit the ground running.
All solid points by Coach Stockstill and yourself, Eric. But before we move on to talking about the Charlotte 49ers, is that who you think is going to start for Middle Tennessee State at quarterback this year, and not Asher O'Hara come week one?
No. I absolutely believe that Asher O'Hara will be the starter. I mean, just from Coach Stockstill's comments, and he didn't lead one way or the other. He said that, hey, you know, I'm not going to name a guy just to name a guy. But we have every reason to believe that Asher will be the starter. And our friend Luis Torres, the former beat writer for Middle Tennessee State, he's moved on to cover the MLF. Joe Spears is actually the beat writer now. But when Luis came on, did say as well that Asher O'Hara should be the guy.
Yeah, that was kind of the impression that I got too from Luis and just from following this program in general. Now for the Charlotte 49ers, certainly seems like from talking to you, Eric, they made a positive impression on you, and reason to be, and as you've been saying, plenty of reason to be optimistic about their upcoming season. Tell me about what you mean when you say that Will Healy was talking about making Charlotte cool.
Yeah, Joe. I mean, first thing first, I mean, Will Healy just radiates energy. And I noted that in the article, that he's a guy who you get around him and it's hard not to like him. I mean, I'll give you this anecdote. I saved it for the podcast. It was Bobby Wilder who kind of ran up behind Coach Healy and jokingly said, hey, you know, guys, I don't know if you guys know this nugget, but Coach Healy apparently is the only Conference USA coach who could still play. And I guess that's an inside joke from maybe during the coach's dinner, where Will Healy, apparently it was said amongst what one of the coaches mentioned that, oh, yeah, Healy said that he's the only guy who can still get out there and play. So that was funny. But just to talk about the energy he mentioned and making Charlotte cool, one of the things he said is that, and I think it's a fair recruiting pitch, he said that at Charlotte, the program's only been around for a handful of years. So it's not like, if you want to be, you know, the five-star recruit who's the next All-American at Oklahoma, or, you know, the next All-American running back at USC, or the next, you know, quarterback from quarterback U, that's fine, but you're not going to choose us. So what I want to do is go after the guys and say, hey, look, you can be the face of Charlotte football. You can rewrite all the record books. To further that point, Benny LeMay, the game I was in Charlotte last year, the press box announcer mentioned four times that Benny LeMay broke a program record, because the program has only been around for so many years. Mm-hmm. So he said, hey, if you want to be the face of this program, come here. You can be the guy who's plastered on the walls in 4 years once you break all the records, if you're a four-year starter. So come to Charlotte. And he said, you know, it's not cool to come to Charlotte yet, but we're getting there. And we're going to make this thing happen. And the players also noted that. You know, Alex Highsmith and Benny LeMay talked about just his energy. Highsmith mentioned that when the guys get a turnover, they have like a little dunk bucket where, you know, he wants guys sprinting off the field to the sideline and dunking the ball, you know, and having fun. And I'm not saying that to say that's going to be the new turnover chain. Like, that's going to make an appearance during the season. It's just a way to promote energy. And Benny LeMay has said that, you know, the music is blaring during practice, and they love that. So his overall deal is just he wants to make Charlotte, you know, a cool, you know, at first. I think that's a great approach, Joe, is that you can't necessarily control whether you're going to win games or lose games, but make football fun. And that should be a decent recruiting approach to get kids to come to your program.
For sure. And let's take a listen to that full quote from Coach Healy here.
You know, the reception's been awesome. High school coaches, high school players, you're still not cool right now, you know. There's still places that have more tradition, and it's not as much of a chance, you know. Whereas if they pick us, they're taking a chance on us, and we have to have a guy on campus enough where they believe in us and our culture enough that they believe we'll have success. So it takes a different type of temperament. You know, the guy who's a really good player and wants to go to a place that's won bowl games and conference championships is not picking Charlotte right now. We're going to get there, but we're not there right now.
Seems like he's got his hand on the steering wheel pretty firmly. Excited to see what he can do with that program. One last thing with Charlotte, Alex Highsmith and Benny LeMay were present for the 49ers as well. Seems like from what they had to say, they kind of took issue with how what people like me think of their potential for the upcoming year. You know, what was your kind of impression of the two Charlotte players at Media Days, Eric?
First off, just my first impression. And I mean, Benny LeMay is a heck of a running back, but Benny is listed at 5'9", 215. Benny's not 5'9", because I'm about an inch and a half taller than Benny. But that aside, just great kid, you know, great talker, really confident in his game. You can tell how passionate he is about the program because he kind of said, you know, talking about getting that statement win. You know, you can tell he really believes it and he's really bought in. Alex Highsmith, another guy who when former Charlotte defensive coordinator Glenn Spencer was brought up, I happened to mention his name because his father, Alex's father, DM'd me and said, hey, could you pass the message along to Coach Spencer that, you know, he's really changed my son's life. And I think he thought that I was the FAU guy, so I had to correct him there. But when I brought it up to Alex, you know, his face really lit up. And you're talking about a kid who is, you know, 6'2", 6'3", about 260 pounds, and is a very soft-spoken kid. You could barely hear him. I had to push my recorder up to his body to pick up the words. But his face lit up when he talked about Glenn Spencer and the impact that he had on his life and just kind of helping develop him as a player. And he's really carried over that confidence with the new coaching staff, and he feels like he can make an impact. And Alex went out of his way to say that they felt that that ranking of 7th was disrespectful by the media. So they're excited and they're fired up about this season. It'll be interesting to see what they can do in 2019.
Yeah, understandable based on, you know, the way they exceeded expectations last year. But only time will tell, I suppose. Now moving on to the FAU Owls. Eric, I understand you spent quite a bit of time listening to what Coach Kiffin had to say. And how did he kind of come off to you?
The best way I can sum it up, and I said this on Twitter, is perception versus reality. And this is something that we can get into on a later podcast. But, you know, Joe, I mean, we've talked about this on prior podcasts. The perception of Lane Kiffin, and we talked about his whether he will or won't stay at FAU, the perception is that he's this, you know, showboat, media attention guy. You know, he loves to promote himself, and you see him, you know, wearing the loud suits and things of that nature. Joe, I promise you, he talked at a volume that was a whisper. This is not the Lane Kiffin that you may have, you know, been built up by certain, maybe his previous stops to think that he's that guy. He really comes off as a guy who's just happy where he's at. He seems, Joe, honestly, like if he can just get up in the morning, have a cup of coffee, go coach football, you know, maybe enjoy an adult beverage in the evening and do it all again, that would be his ideal life, you know, just down there on the water. He just seems like he's just enjoying the slower pace of life, not being recognized. He came in, we actually, or I shouldn't say we, I saw when he walked down the steps about 8:30 to make his way down and didn't sit down immediately to the table with the other representatives, kind of, you know, went and grabbed a cup of coffee, you know, talked for a little bit with some of the CUSA staff, but just not that flamboyant, loud personality that you may have been built up to believe that he is. And that was interesting.
From the very little that I was able to catch live, it still seems like he's not super comfortable talking into microphones or on camera. Was that fair to say?
I didn't catch his ESPN portion, but see, I'm not around him enough to say if he's comfortable or not. I just think, excuse me for the long pauses here, guys. I just think that it's not necessarily that he's antagonistic towards the media. I just, like I said, I think he just wants to get up and coach football. I think if he could live without the media interaction, he would be fine. But he wasn't, you know, antagonistic towards us. He just is very, I think it's safe to say it's not his favorite thing in the world, but he doesn't hate it either. And I wouldn't say he's not comfortable. He's just a very low-key, kind of under-the-radar kind of guy, which, once again, is different from what you've been led to believe that he is.
Yeah, no, I certainly didn't mean to imply that he was antagonistic. I just meant typically he speaks very, very softly, is very kind of to the point in his answers, doesn't really try to, like, give these long-winded podcaster, radio announcer-type answers that we – give sometimes, but that was kind of more of what I meant by that, but it kind of seems like that's still the case with him. So I think with that, we can talk about the Old Dominion Monarchs. So one of the things that you mentioned to me was Bobby Wilder was a little preoccupied in his in talking to the media while you were there.
No, yeah, I think we caught Coach Wilder during his lunch session. Lunch there was barbecue, of course. It's Texas, so, you know, got to have a little Rudy's barbecue, and it was very tasty. Don't get me wrong, but I think maybe they didn't have breakfast in the morning because Coach Wilder, you know, he's like, hey, I'm a little hungry, so I'm gonna grab some of this barbecue and we can do our session while I'm chowing down some barbecue. And I don't blame him because, like I said, the barbecue is pretty darn good, so I don't blame him for not wanting to step away from Rudy's.
Nice. What did Coach Wilder have to say about his team's improvement in the offseason here?
It was interesting, Joe. One of the things he said was that as far as the quarterback situation, like Coach Stockstill at Middle Tennessee State, he's not going to name one just to name one. And he even said that this thing could go on into the season where we're going to find out who's right and we're going to play multiple quarterbacks until we get it right. Another thing that I want to credit Ed Miller for, because he's the one who picked this up. Ed Miller is the beat writer, I believe, for the Virginia Pilot, if my memory serves me correct. However, he said that Stevie Williams that Coach Wilder said that Stevie Williams could see some time at receiver, which, Lord knows, if you've listened to this podcast, you've heard me gush over Stevie Williams enough. Just shocking that he went from, you know, being a 16, 17-year-old quarterback phenom to now potentially playing receiver. So there's that. But he did also say that, like I said, that quarterback situation could drag on into the season. And then he also mentioned, when asked by our own Steve Helwig, who was the player who improved the most over the offseason? He paused, said that's a really good question, you have to think about it, and then went with his son Derek Wilder, who they moved from linebacker to defensive end, and talked about how, you know, he's just crushing the weight room, squatting over 500 pounds and put on over 20 pounds of muscle. So I thought that was an interesting answer as well.
Yeah, definitely. And excited to see what Derek can do in the offseason. And in terms of improvement, based on what they were able to do last season, it seems like most of the team needs improvement. So only about a month left until the season. Gosh, time really flew by. Thought I would have been a little more productive in the offseason, but oh well. Speaking of needing improvement, me as a writer. Anyway, before we move on to talking about Conference USA West, anything stick out about the Western Kentucky Hilltoppers and Coach Tyson Helton from CUSA Media Days? I know they're the one team from that division we haven't really talked about yet.
Yeah, you know, not too much really stood out. Devin Key was there, and very talented safety for the Tops. But the major thing that Coach Helton was really kind of harping on was the fact that he really wants to reinvigorate the fan base and the players. He doesn't believe that the talent is that far off from their winning seasons when he was there prior, and that mostly he thinks that there will be some errors and a trial by fire. But he comes from a coaching family, so he really believes that. He just wants to kind of, you know, steady the program, get things back on the right track, keep things from slipping, and that because of his family pedigree, that he'll be able to lean on them for advice. He also mentioned Jeff Brohm as well, that he hasn't been talking to Coach Brohm, who we all know was at Western Kentucky before. He hasn't talked to much in the offseason, but during the season, they'll trade football notes, and that'll be another source of, you know, someone he can go to. But, yeah, those are really the main things that really came out of Tyson Helton and his media availability.
Interesting. Definitely curious to see how this goes. Definitely think Helton has the ability to kind of lead that program in a really solid direction. It's just going to be a matter of execution. So that's it for the CUSA East recap. We'll go ahead and move on to the Conference USA West teams now. Real quick, our correspondent on the ground there was Steve Helwig, who recently joined the site. Super happy to have him on. Not able to have him on the show today, unfortunately, but if you want to see his complete recap of what happened on the availability periods for the CUSA West teams, just go ahead and check out that article on UDD. I'll go ahead and link it in the body of the post for this podcast on the website so you can take a look. But for you, Eric, and kind of examining, A, being there yourself and talking to Steve and reading his coverage, what really sticks out to you about the West and the teams in contention for that title?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing that really stood out was just Seth Littrell, his presence there. At Media Day was just something that, you know, kind of, once again, having not met him in person, he can be, I think I describe him this way to you, you know, off air, that he kind of reminds you of the coach from Varsity Blues, except 50 years younger and definitely in shape. I mean, Seth Littrell is a football coach's coach, just, you know, very stern and to the point, just all about football. But Mason Fine also, I mean, I caught this on the flight there, because when North Texas was at the ESPN portion, I was just getting into Dallas before I could make it over to the Star. And Mason Fine spoke for his just really affection for Coach Littrell and really make him the quarterback he is. So his players definitely have a strong admiration for him. But the main thing, and I think we have a bite here that we'll go to, is just Coach Littrell's just presence and the way his team really respects him. And because of that respect, they'll just, you know, to use the old proverbial phrase, they'll run through a wall to play for him and make things happen.
Absolutely. And that Friday Night Lights comparison is just spot on. He looks exactly like the guy. We'll go ahead and play that that bite from UNT quarterback Mason Fine here.
Yeah, so when I first got here, I was scared of the man. I'm not going to lie. He's intimidating. I mean, come on. He's, you know, a pretty big dude. Works out the way he is personality wise you know, he's quiet, but when he says something, he has, you know, fear, you know, fierceness in his voice. But, you know, over the years, we've you know, we've grown through adversity, grown through, you know, off-season times. Look at the guy as a father figure now. So came in scared of the dude, but now I'm not afraid to go to that dude with any situation I have, high or low, a tough problem. I know he's going to be there for me, and he's going to give me the best advice, and I know he's going to, no matter what, he's going to have my back.
So there you have it. That's a preseason offensive player of the year, Mason Fine, talking about his head coach. Like I mentioned, just a really apt comparison to the guy from TV. And I think Littrell, just based on the way he carries himself and from the fact that he's very photogenic, like, I think he has a TV career ahead of him when he eventually hangs up the coaching headset.
I'd have to agree with you there.
The other team that could potentially give North Texas a run for their money in the West, in my opinion, is Louisiana Tech. Skip Holtz really seems optimistic, or at least excited about the idea of playing Texas this year, and reasonable to think so. Always good to get your program that kind of good coverage when you play that high level of a team. But from your experience, Eric, what about them really you know, stood out to you one way or another in terms of how prepared they are for the upcoming season?
Joe, they are very excited about their chances in 2019. I think it starts with the guy, Jamar Smith, and you got to go to Adrian Hardy. But someone who coach really was very complimentary of was Willie Baker, in the sense that people may only know this Louisiana Tech team because of Sack Daddy Jalen Ferguson, who now resides in Baltimore. And he wants everyone to know that, hey, I know we lost a guy, but we got a pretty good guy behind him, Willie Baker. So it's very complimentary of him. And just outside of that, they were really happy and really excited, as you mentioned, about the idea of playing a Texas team, because Coach Holtz really mentioned that to kind of set that atmosphere and that set the tone for your season when you can play against a big team. He thinks it does more good than harm.
Yeah, definitely good reason to think so. Anytime a G5 can kind of grow their profile by playing in that kind of game and playing well, first and foremost, that definitely helps. So excited to see what the Bulldogs can make of that opportunity here. And next on the list, we'll talk about the Rice Owls. Obviously, some much needed improvement after a 2-11 season in 2018. Some uncertainty about what's going on with the quarterback position battle, but second-year head coach Mike Blumkin really doesn't seem that concerned based on how he came off in those press conferences. What do you think?
Joe, he really kind of stole the show as far as the West goes. Coach Blumgren was really well-received as far as just people unanimously, if I get that word out correctly, believing that he's the right guy at Rice, that he has the right, you know, kind of makeup to recruit Houston, to recruit Texas. And, you know, you and I have talked about some of the challenges at Rice as far as it being a highly academic school and some of the standards there. And he's just really all in. And, you know, when you talk about his quarterback situation, he believes depth is the key. He mentioned that, you know, a guy may not play the entire season, so you want to have two or three QBs on the roster who can get the job done. But he really feels that with the system that he's brought over from Stanford, no matter who it is who's starting for them, they're going to be in good shape, in a good place. So Coach Blumgren just, you know, really kind of set a good impression and was really excited about getting into the year, and he thinks that he's got things going in the right direction.
Yeah, and, you know, reason to think so. I think everybody kind of thought when Blumgren took the job that it was a good hire, and no one expected an immediate turnaround. So seems like he's taking steps in the right direction on every level in terms of being a good ambassador for the program and getting them to improve their play. But, well, I guess we'll get more proof of that in the upcoming season here. Next, we'll talk about the Southern Miss Golden Eagles. There's definitely some kind of division amongst fans and pundits of CUSA West. Some people think they have a legit shot to contend for that divisional title. Some people aren't as impressed. But one thing's certain, it seems like Jay Hobson is really high on Jack Abraham. And that's interesting considering I think there's a couple different guys in that quarterback room that could potentially win that job. But, you know, based on what I've read and what I saw, Hobson really seems like he wants, or at least he thinks that Abraham has all the tools to be their guy.
No, I think you hit the nail on the head. And, you know, maybe from the outside looking in, we may have thought that that quarterback competition or that quarterback spot was maybe up in a competition per se, but it's not. I mean, he kind of shut the door on that. Jack Abraham is going to be their guy. He kind of raved about, you know, his completion percentage and how efficient he is. And he also just kind of was very excited about having a guy who, you know, what was it? I think it was Andrew Luck. It was said about him that, you know, you cut his head open and there's a football in there. He kind of said the same thing about Jack Abraham and that, you know, he's a very intelligent guy and he eats, drinks and sleeps football because he wants that next level opportunity.
If you cut Andrew Luck's head open, it might look like the missing link, but that's another podcast. It seems like Abraham's about as solid a pick to win that quarterback battle as anybody. And you know, he kind of briefly mentioned Tate Watley, but I think Tate Watley's a little bit better of a dual threat, but Abraham definitely seems like he's the better pure quarterback, which we've talked about before, but interesting that Hobson kind of confirmed what we've talked about before. I guess then we'll talk about the defending champs, the UAB Blazers. Eric, for you, what kind of stood out here? Because I don't know that there was too much talk about, like, the future for UAB in Bill Clark's media availability. It was just a lot of reflection on all the stuff that they've accomplished in the last 4 or 5 years at this point. And, you know, of course it's still a great story, but I don't know. What are you thinking based on what the Blazers players and their coach said at CUSA Media Days, as far as their upcoming season is concerned?
Well, Joe, I think the first part of what you said is correct, is that there's not a lot of talk about the future. Mm-hmm. But it's not necessarily because they're stuck in the past. It's that Bill Clark's team really thinks that their time is now. Mm-hmm. He was very firm on saying, hey, you know, the year before last when we began play again, they had us that like 110th out of like 100 and, you know, however many teams. and we managed to defy the odds. And the same thing again. I think that's just, and I can't help but agree with him that that has to be the mentality that they take, is when the entire program gets shut down and, you know, and you fight back from that, what can you do but consistently, you know, think of yourself as the underdog and say, hey, yeah, we're not talking about the future. We're talking about now, because they've managed to defy the odds. So that was one thing that Coach Clark was very steadfast on. And the other thing was just his players talked about how much they really love Coach Clark, and that he's someone who, you know, maybe they dealt with other coaches who were only concerned about them as athletes, as players. But Coach Clark, they really believe that they have a mentor and someone who's going to care about them, you know, when they're 40 and they've got kids, and when they're 60 and have grandkids. So just their love and admiration for Bill Clark was really inspiring to see.
Certainly so. And Bill Clark, it seems like his whole tenure at UAB has been one big inspirational story. So hopefully that continues and we get another good year out of that program, from a fan's perspective anyway. And we'll talk about the UTEP Miners next then. Obviously, program been through a lot, won one game in 2 years, never where you want to be if you're a college coach. But how does Dana Dimmel seem to be handling that?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where they know it's a rebuilding process, but the players who were there, you know, at Media Day and also around the program, they just seem eager to put last year behind them and just put on the pads. I think the major takeaway, Joe, is they're eager to find out for themselves what they are. Because the fact that the program has been in kind of this rebuilding stage for the past couple of years, you know, each season, it's not like they're a UAB who's had success over the past couple of years, or a Louisiana Tech, or a Marshall, who, you know, this is who we are. You know, we're a good football program. We're going to go out there, and if we follow the game plan that's been set for us, we'll win ball games. I feel like they're exploring and trying to find out for themselves, having to do all this fresh and learning to win again. You know, they're definitely there at that point, and it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out in 2019.
Yeah, it could be interesting to see how far they've come from those days. Obviously, I'm not really expecting a dramatic turnaround, but you know, I think a lot of these guys seem to be really hungry to get back to that team that's at least competitive. So hopefully based on what they were talking about, like you mentioned, they definitely have that desire and that drive to get there. But again, it's all a matter of execution. And we're only a few weeks away from seeing what they've got in the tank. And last but not least, we'll talk about the UTSA Roadrunners. I think a lot of people would agree Frank Wilson may or may not be on the hot seat as far as his job is concerned. Certainly been kind of underwhelming for the last couple of years. No bowl eligibility in 2018 or 2017. Finished up 3-9 last year. You know, were you able to kind of glean anything from Coach Wilson and, you know, what his kind of perception of his situation is at UTSA?
Well, in the effort of full disclosure, this was one of the programs I did miss. So I wasn't able to really catch up with Coach Wilson. But just from talking to some of the other writers who were there for both days, some of us came in for one day. Some of us were able to make it for the full portion. Some of us made it for the full portion. Some made it for a portion and a half and whatnot. But anyhow, I think the major theme that seems to come from UTSA and Frank Wilson is just blocking out the noise. You know, they know it's there. Last season was a disappointment. They know that there's talk of, you know, maybe Coach Wilson may or may not finish out the season, as you mentioned. But the major thing is just blocking out the noise and, once again, finding out who they are and playing good football. I think from just a personal perspective, we've talked about the quarterback situation. They have to get that right. And the theme there is that they seem to be very confident in Frank Harris, that, you know, should he be the guy that, you know, that situation, that position will be taken care of, and they can worry about the rest. And if they're able to do that, I think maybe UTSA can sneak up on some people. I mean, they were competitive at points last year, but it's a matter of playing four quarters of football and, you know, once again, as Coach Wilson kind of noted, just blocking out the noise.
Yeah, it seems like this is a team that's really ready to get back to playing the way that they they know they can play. Here's the quote from free safety Carl Austin III. I'm excited to get back on the field after the turnout we had last year. That really wasn't UTSA football that we showed last year, and we're anxious to get back on the field to show San Antonio and the rest of the world that what UTSA football is all about. So, yeah, I think you're right in stating that there's definitely optimism about the upcoming year and definitely a sense of, like, unfulfilled potential on that team. So I think that's going to make for some entertaining football down the road. Eric, your kind of closing thoughts on CUSA Media Day. What do you think was the biggest highlight of your trip to Texas as far as this is concerned?
You mean besides Rudy's Barbecue, which is sometimes mouthwatering to the point where you can't put it down?
Yeah, let's go with your kind of biggest takeaway from a football perspective. We'll leave the delicious barbecue out of this.
Okay. Besides, I better stop. You know, kind of plugging Rudy's there. From a football perspective, what really struck me the most was the attention around both Lane Kiffin and Butch Davis. Coach Davis, this is the one thing that I tell people. When you talk about that perception of what Lane Kiffin is versus the reality, and then you look at Coach Davis, they're actually flip-flopped. Coach Davis is the guy who loves being around the media, and I don't mean that in a superficial sense. I mean, here's the best way I can analogize it. Joe, you know how, like, when your dad pulls you aside and he wants to tell you a story and it's like, oh, man, I don't want to hear this, versus, like, when your grandfather pulls you aside and it's like, okay, you know, this is pretty cool. Like, grandpa, like, you know, fought in Vietnam or did something cool, and, like, you're actually interested to hear about it. That's Coach Davis. Like, it's always story time with Coach, in the sense that he actually had the media around talking about how he used to get this, Joe. He used to drive the school bus for the JV basketball team when he was starting out as a coach, and that was one of the ways he made money, was being the bus driver for the JV team, and, you know, taking them up and down, and that, you know, sometimes they had games in St. Louis, sometimes they had games in Kansas City, and that was Coach Davis's responsibility. So he just loves kind of being that guy around the media. Whereas with Lane Kiffin, as we talked about earlier, it's not, you know, is it an uncomfortable thing? Does he not necessarily like it? You know, we don't really know, but it's just such a polar opposite compared to Coach Davis, and that perception of what Coach Kiffin and Coach Davis are really flip-flop. So that was one of my biggest takeaways, and just, you know, eager for football, man. I mean, you can tell the players are fired up, the coaches are fired up. So we're not too far away from football season, guys.
Not at all. Not at all. All right, before we wrap up, special thanks to Steve Helwick for his coverage of Conference USA Media Days. Go check out his stuff on the site as well. And, of course, Eric Henry's coverage of CUSA East on the site. All good stuff from those 2 days in Texas. And special thanks, of course, to Rudy's Barbecue for apparently buying space in Eric Henry's head until he goes back to Texas. With that, we will go ahead and say thank you so much for listening. Once again, subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, every platform that you listen to this show on. Leave a review. Really helps us grow. And as we get closer and closer to the season, we're going to wrap up team previews as best we can, and really just get you ready for the start of football season, because I know we're ready for it, for sure. Once again, if you haven't already, follow Underdog Dynasty on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and check out the site every day for more G5 football goodness. And if you want to follow us on social media, I'm at @JoeHio_, and Eric is at @EricCHenry_. With that, I think we're going to go enjoy the weekend. We'll talk to you all very soon, and happy football watching, everybody.